This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Because we've started later than I would have liked to have. And to look at a particular question, one facet of a particular question, we're not going to treat the whole question. And that is, in this whole question of chesed, the conflict that arises between one's promotion of one's own progress and chesed. I'm not even talking about promotion of one's material progress in conflict with chesed, even promotion of one's spiritual progress in conflict with chesed. At what times and how does one decide when you come first and when chesed comes first? And as I said, we'll do one aspect of that question, because that's a big and an important question to answer. And in so doing, what I want to look at specifically is the relationship between Rachel and Leah, which seems very, very peculiar. Obviously, it starts off to a degree strained. Yaakov only wanted to marry Rachel. He lands up with Leah too. Leah feels that Yaakov's real affections are with Rachel, so there's obviously a kind of insecurity on the part of Leah, probably. Altogether, a difficult relationship, and particularly in this week's Sedra, with Leah having the children and Rachel being unable to have the children for a long time, the tension develops and builds up even further, to the point where the Torah actually says, "Batere Rachel ki lo yoldo li Yaakov," and Rachel saw that she was not giving birth for Yaakov. "Vatekanei Rachel ba'achesa," and Rachel became jealous of her sister. Actually, a touch of jealousy entering into the relationship. Rashi describes that it wasn't just an ordinary jealousy, and we're going to discuss what type of jealousy, but already there's a touch of jealousy coming into the relationship. It becomes further stressed in the episode of Reuven with the Dudoim, whatever that is. Rashi translates the Dudoim as jasmine, where Reuven goes and picks this jasmine and brings it to his mother Leah, while Leah and Rachel are sitting together. And Rachel says to Leah, "Please give me some of the jasmine that your son has brought." And Leah answers her very sharply. Batzomer lo, and she says to Rachel, "Hama'at kachteich es ishi velo kachas gam es dudoye b'ni." Is it not enough that you've taken the affections of my husband, but you still want to take the jasmine of my son as well? Is there still more you want to take from me? Haven't you taken enough from me? Again, the feeling that the real effect of Yaakov are with Rachel and not with Leah. Batomer Rachel, and Rachel says, "No, that isn't my intention at all. Lachen yishkav imcho imoch halaylo tachas tudoi b'nech. If that's what you suspect me of, don't worry. He can spend the evening with you in return for the didoim, for the jasmine." Obviously, it appears that Rabban mentions too that this jasmine, firstly, is very pleasantly smelling, and Leah felt that she was going to use this to beautify the house and to give a sort of a nice perfume. There's some views that this jasmine or whatever these dudoyim are even had a sort of an aphrodisiac effect. Whatever it was, there was certainly a connection between the dudoyim, between this jasmine and the romance of Rachel and Leah, of Rachel and Yaakov. And Leah became very sensitive when Rachel asked it. It's a funny sort of thing. Rachel's intentions were very innocent, but to Leah, she's basically asking Leah, it's like a lahavdil, elef havdolos, but it must have felt something like a mistress coming to her wife and asking whether she can borrow her perfume. It's passionate. It's just that's not the way one does it. It's terribly, terribly upsetting what such a thing would be to the wife. And here the Tzoris, Rachel and Leah, who have a difficult relationship in any case vis-a-vis Yaakov, she comes and she wants Leah to supply her with the jasmine which she's going to use to make herself and her home attractive for Yaakov. So Leah gets upset. And Rachel says, no, that wasn't my intention at all. I enjoy jasmine. Please, I just want to take jasmine. If you think I'm taking it in order to steal the affections of Yaakov, not at all. You let Yaakov spend the evening with you, and really that's not what my intentions are at all.
But again, there's that tension coming through and that touch of bitterness on the part of Leah. And yet one has to understand how great these people were, how great Rachel and Leah were. They would never take the place in Jewish history that they did if they weren't of our very greatest. There haven't been women in Jewish history as great as Leah, never mind as great as Rachel. Leah is one of the greatest that we've ever had. And despite this difficult relationship, don't forget that when Rachel saw Leah going to be given as the wife of Yaakov, don't forget that she gave Leah the secret sign that Yaakov and Rachel had, so that Leah shouldn't be insulted. So it was really Rachel participated in the whole thing, so as not to insult Leah. They were terribly sensitive to one another. One has to see it in the right context. These were women of unbelievably great stature, and no way can they be suspected of any kind of petty jealousy. And in fact, the Medrash says of Leah right here, Omer Rabbi Avahu, Sofo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shelo Hoso Kavonoso Elo L'Shem Shemayim. The Ribbono Shel Olam saw that her intention, Leah's intention, was nothing but L'Shem Shemayim, 100% religious were her intentions. L'Hamid Shvotim, so as to be involved in the establishment of the Shvotim, of the 12 tribes which were going to be born from these two women and the Shvachos. And yet there seems to be a touch of something wrong, and there are some criticisms that are levelled. In next week's Sedra, we told of the story with Dina, where Dina goes out for a walk and she is raped by the people of Shechem, by Shechem ben Hamor. The pasuk says, "Vateitze Dino bas Leah, asher yodel Yaakov liros bifnas oretz." And Dino, the daughter of Leah, went out for a walk. Asks the Gemara, and Rashi brings it: why is it that she's called bat Leah and not bat Yaakov? Why is she called the daughter of Leah? Normally, she's called the daughter of the man. Why is it the daughter of Leah? Says Rashi, "Elo al shem yitzioso nikreis bat Leah." Because of the fact that she went out for the walk, she's called the daughter of Leah. She afhi yatzon is hoiso, because she too was outward, Leah. She neemar, as it says in our sedra, batetze Leah likrosoi. Leah went out to meet him. There's a touch of criticism when Yaakov came back. The pasuk goes on in our sedra. After Rachel says Yaakov can spend the evening with you. Then Vayova Yaakov min Asodeboerev, Yaakov came from the field in the evening. Vateitze Leah likroso, and Leah went out to meet him. Vatomer, and she said, Elai tovoi, you will come to me this evening, ki socho sechaticho bedudoi b'ni. Also, a funny statement. Because I have rented you for this evening with the jasmine of my son. Vayishka vimo balayla ohu, and he spent the evening with her. That's the... And here, the next week's Sedra, Chazal criticize her a little bit for this Vateitzei Leah. And the Chazal imply, in fact they don't imply, they say, that the rape of Dina was caused by the fact that Dina was a little bit outward in her relationships with the people around and about. That she actually, an attractive young girl's place is at home. And even when she's out, certainly in our modern society where women don't stay at home, there's a way of behaving, and there's a way of behaving which incites the kind of response which came to Dina. Now, we don't suspect that Dina did anything open and anything overt that could have brought about this response, but still the Torah says Batetzei Dina, she went out. And that the use of that word with a lady is just, it's not ladylike. Ladies don't go out. They go, they have to go, but they don't go out. They're not outward, and that outwardness already breaks down a certain barrier into the relationship between them and other men. And Dina is criticized with it, although, by the way, she was only 6 years old when that happened. Dina is criticized with it, and more important, Leah is criticized for giving Dina that little something, just a tiny, on their level, and it's so difficult for us even to speak about it, because we don't understand on what level they were operating, but on their level, that was considered just a little bit of a lack of fitness. There was a little bit of a lack of this kind of modesty, of this inwardness, of this underplaying themselves, to the point where it was felt that this was handed down in the family from Leah to Dina. That's strange, that in something where there seems to be no criticism leveled against Leah in the Sedra, she's criticized next week. Not only is there no criticism leveled against her in the Sedra, but the Gemara says an amazing thing which is in total contrast to the Rashi that I've just read to you. The Gemara says in Eruvin Daf Kufa with Beis, Kol Isha Shetzivaz Baila Ledvar Mitzvah Havien Lo Bonim Shafilu Bedore Shel Moshe Lo Hoyu Kamosu. Any woman who, at this stage the Gemara understands this to mean, who verbally seduces or entices her husband into having relations for the right reasons, will have children of a stature that didn't even exist in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. By the way, you know, it's often the accusation is leveled against old-fashioned intersexual relationships, and particularly religious ones, that the woman has no active part to play in the whole thing, and that she's just meant to be totally passive in the relationship. It's an interesting Gemara. It's not like that at all. Right? Any woman who verbally attracts and entices her husband will have children greater than the children that were in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Ilu b'doiro shel Moshe, because in the generation of Moshe, Ketiv, it says, "Havu lochem anashim chachomim unvoinim v'yudim l'shifteichem." Moshe says, "Let us find men who are chachomim, wise, nevoinim." Nevoinim is a particular type of wisdom. It's a dynamic wisdom where you can actually work things out. Chachomim is what you know. Nevoinim is what you're able to analyze and reason. So find chachomim and nevoinim v'yudim l'shifteichem, and well-known people. And it says afterwards, and I took people from your tribes, well known and wise, because they couldn't find anybody who had bina. There wasn't anybody who had that kind of depth of intellect. There were people who knew, but they didn't have the depth of intellect. However, but in the case of Leah, Leah went out to Yaakov and said, "You'll come to me this evening because I have hired you." Uchtiv, and it says in Divrei Hayomim, "Uvnei Yisocha Yoidei Bino Leitim Ladas Mayatz Yisrael Roshayim." And from the children of Yisocha, who was the child born of this union between Leah and Yaakov, and the children of Yisocha were considered Nevoinim. They were considered extremely deep in their understanding and deep in their system of reasoning and their ability to reason. And ultimately, it was the children of Yisocha who became the Talmidei Chachomim of Klal Yisro. But Yisocha was the tribe that was the intellect. Those were the real intellects of Avam Yisro. So here we have a Gemara that says, not only was there nothing wrong with Leah's behavior, but uses this as an example of behavior which brings about such greatness in children that even in the generation of David, of Moshe Rabbeinu, there were no such children. And we have another chazal which Rashi brings next week, which says it was because she went out to Yaakov that Dinah had a little bit of a lack of tznius, which resulted in Shechem raping her. Total contradiction. It's one contradiction. The other contradiction the Gemara itself asks, and that is that on the contrary, we have chazal that say it's not nice to do that. It's not nice for a woman to be verbally forward in such situations. Answers the Gemara, in the case of Leah, it wasn't that she was verbally forward, but she made herself attracted and related to Yaakov very affectionately. There are ways of transmitting messages other than verbal. In fact, when it comes to these things, the Torah considers the verbal one of the most primitive forms of expression. There are other forms of expression which are much more subtle and much more sophisticated, and it was those forms that Leah used. So now we in fact have a definition of a woman's sexual role as a matter of interest, which is one of non-verbal active involvement. It's clearly according to the Gemara.
But that Gemara is also difficult, because what does it mean that she didn't say anything, that it was all done tacitly, that it was all done by the way she related to Yaakov? She says quite clearly, and when Yaakov came in from the field, and she said, Eilai Tovoi, you will come to me, because I rented you. But what does it mean that she didn't do it verbally? She did do it verbally. So we have to understand the whole thing. One more question. When Dinah is finally raped in next week's Sefer, in chapter Lamed Daled, so it's before that, it's also in next week's Sefer, when Yaakov comes to Eretz Yisrael and he's preparing to meet Esav, Vayakum ba'laylahu, and Yaakov got up that night just before meeting Esav, Vayikach et shtei noshov, and he took his two wives, Veshtei shipchosov, and his two other wives, the shvochos, Bila and Zilpa, Ves achad oso yelodov, and his 11 children. Who were the 11 children? These 6 children of Leah, the 2 children of Bila, the 2 children of Zilpa, that's 10. Who's the 11? Yosef is already born, that's the 11th. Ask the Gemara, and where's Dinah? He's got the whole family there except Dinah. What's he done with his daughter? The Dinah Eichana Isa, says Rashi. Where was Dinah? Answers the Medrash, Nesono Besevo, she was in a box. He put her in the press. He put her in the list. V'noah b'fonea, and he locked it. He sealed the container, good and proper. So he locked it up. Why not? Because daughters are not important, but Shelo yitain bo Esav einov, so that Esav shouldn't see her and become attracted to her and want a shidduch, because it was in fact talked that such a possibility existed. Ulekach ne'nash Yaakov, and as a result of that, Yaakov was punished. Shemenao me'ochiv shematach zereno lemutav. He prevented the shidduch between Dinah and Esav, and that might have brought Esav back to tshuva. And as a result of that, v'noflo b'yad Shechem. You don't want her to marry Esav, she landed up with Shechem. Is that any better? You didn't want her to marry peacefully and nicely, she was raped. Is that any better? That's your punishment. What did he do after all? He didn't want Esav as his in-laws. Bad enough having Esav as his brother. To still have Esav as his machetonim, and Esav and his wife, that wasn't exactly, or his son-in-law rather, that wasn't exactly what he wanted. Can you blame the man? Would you want Esav for the son-in-law? Who would think of such a thing? And look at the punishment. Dinah is raped. Look how harsh. So exactly what that is, we'll still discuss also. But the interesting thing here is, this is a completely different reason for Dinah being raped. Now, whose fault was it? Well, the one Chazal says, tells us it was Leah. That Leah, by being a Yatzonis, that Leah, by being an outward sort of woman, caused indirectly the rape of Dinah. And the other Chazal tells it was Yaakov, because Yaakov hid Dinah away and didn't allow Esav to get his eyes onto her. That was why she was raped. So what's it all about? Is it possible that there is a bit of jealousy among the two wives, the two sisters, Rachel and Leah? It seems clearly that there is. The first thing to understand is that jealousy was not the normal jealousy that exists between people that we know. Our kind of jealousy, that they didn't have. What do I mean, not they didn't have our kind of jealousy? It's the same kind of jealousy, but it's for different reasons. It wasn't that they were afraid of losing the affections of Yaakov, or that they felt insecure, or that they felt threatened, or whatever it was. That wasn't the issue. The issue was, to what extent are they going to be responsible and involved in the building of Klal Yisrael? There was jealousy. Each one wanted a bigger share in the building ultimately of Klal Yisrael. Each one wanted to be the major mother of Klal Yisrael. We're talking now about the Yiddish Mama, we're not talking about a Yiddish Mama. The Rachel and Leah, they are the mothers of all of us. And each one wanted to be taka the mothers of all of us, not just the mothers of some of us. And in that there was a bit of jealousy. But it was 100% Lashem Shemayim. It was jealousy in wanting to do the mitzvah and wanting to be the founder of Klal Yisrael. That kind of jealousy, there was a touch of, just a little touch. And what I want to look at with you very briefly is just the role of jealousy. Is it positive? Is it negative? Can it be positive? How is it to be positive? Firstly, kina obviously is very negative.
we're told in Pirkei Avos that Akino v'Akovod v'Ataiva, Kino is one of the things, jealousy is one of the things shemetzines odom in ha'olam, it destroys you utterly. It results in your ultimately going out of your mind, so to say. You lose your whole life. You're so busy running after things that you can never get that you don't have any chance to enjoy the things that you really have got. There's Kino, jealousy, when you run after honor, it's the same kind of thing. These are all elusive things, you can never have enough of them. And Taiva is a desire. Taiva is when you want something that isn't yours. That's Taiva. Kino is when you want something that is somebody else's. There's a difference. Taiva, if you walk past a shop and there's something in the window and you want it, that's Taiva. Kino is only if you walk past and somebody else is buying it, and that's when you decide you want it. That's Kino. Ruchas Tzadikim gives a beautiful illustration of Kino. He says there were two men. One was a jealous man. It was his middah, that he excelled in jealousy. And there was another man who excelled in Taiva. Like we had last week, 2 weeks ago, there was about Gedolim in pleasure seeking. So we have this week Gedolim in Kino and in Taiva. And a king meets the two of them and says, I want to give you a present. Now one of you must choose what, I'll give you whatever you want, but the condition is, one of you must choose what I give, and I'll give you whatever you ask for, and I'll give your friend double. That puts them in a bit of a difficult position. The one who's a godel in jealousy thought to himself, it's ridiculous, I'll ask for 100 rand and he'll get 200 rand, I would rather have nothing. So let him ask first, let him ask for the 100 rand, let him be the shlumil, and then I'll get the 200 rand. The one with the taiva said, oh no, I'm going to ask for 100 rand, and already 300 rand is being given out, and I'm only going to get 100 of the 300. I don't care that he gets it, I want it, must be mine. So they debate forwards and backwards and forwards. Eventually the Baal Taiva, the one who's strong with Taiva, manages to persuade the jealous one to be the first to make his request. What was his request? His request was, pierce out one of my eyes. Right? So to the friend he would pierce out both eyes. That would give him nachas. He's prepared to lose one eye, that the friend should lose both eyes. And that's the concept of kino. Kino is not what you've got or what is, it's what the other guy hasn't got. That's what's important. And obviously, kino is going to be motzias adam min ha'olam. It's going to go mad pursuing kino. And yet, on the other hand, there's such a thing as kinas sofrim. There's such a thing as intellectual jealousy, which is considered very good. There's the medrash which I did on when we did our first in the series of chesed, where the medrash says in medrash Tehillim Lamed Zayin. If it went for jealousy, the world wouldn't exist. People wouldn't establish businesses, they wouldn't build homes, they wouldn't get married, nothing would get done if it weren't for kino. So we see on the other hand that there's a certain merit to this competitive spirit. What we're actually looking at is competition. To what extent is this competitive ambition which exists in many societies, or in most societies, to what extent is it a Torah concept? To what extent should there be this competitiveness? Let's understand the chazal that led to Dina's, to the rape of Dina. Firstly, what was wrong with what Rachel said, with what Leah said to Rachel? On the one hand, she's criticized for being a yatsanit, for going out. On the other hand, we're told was the most wonderful thing she did. When she says, a light over, you'll come to me this evening, the Gemara in Eruvin says that doesn't mean, she didn't say it, she only implied it. But the Torah says she did say it. So how do we understand that? Says the Or HaChaim, that she said to Yaakov, you'll come to me this evening, she didn't mean sexually. She meant, come into my house now. Because his normal place of living was with Rachel. He didn't just commute between Rachel and Leah. His home was with Rachel. That's where Yaakov lived. And he would have gone home to Rachel. Leah didn't want Rachel to feel the rejection of Yaakov coming home to Rachel and then walking out for the evening. That's not nice. So to save Rachel that embarrassment, and see what level we're talking about, what kind of people we're talking about. We're not talking about petty little bitches. We're talking about G'dayleh, the absolute ultimate of female achievement in the Torah world. and she wanted to save Rachel that embarrassment that her husband should come in and then go out. So she went out to meet Yaakov before he came in to say, come and have dinner with me this evening, you don't have to go home. I've settled it with Rachel. Your place is with me this evening. So there was nothing wrong in her saying that. So what did she do wrong? There's a stress on the word. She could easily have said Vatomer, and she said Tova Eli, come to me this evening. Could have been an invitation. Instead it's Eli Tovoi. When the noun comes before the verb, you're stressing the noun. It's not come to me this evening, it's to me you're coming this evening. And that, just that stress was not nice, because what she's really saying is, I've got her out of the way tonight. I've dealt with her, I gave her some dudoyim, I gave her some jasmine, you're coming to me. Then you've got a touch of the jealousy. We'll define that still in a little bit later on. What is jealousy? There is a drive in a human being for excellence, and that's one of the most positive drives that there is in a human being, and it's a drive that needs to be nurtured and needs to be developed. Its origin is simply the neshama striving to get back, the soul striving to get back to its origins, which is the Ribono Shel Olam, which is excellence par excellence. It's the extreme of excellence, and everybody has this striving and this craving to do better and to go up and to go up and to go up. That's the basis of ambition. It's really a spiritual experience, ambition. And the important thing, the chiddush of tonight, is something which is quite shaking, but it's unfortunately very true. We all acknowledge in ourselves this pursuit of excellence, and you'll hardly find a person who doesn't pursue excellence in some field or another. But we like to believe that our pursuit of excellence is independent of the society in which we live, and it's unfortunately not so. Nobody would run the mile in 3 minutes 55 seconds if somebody hadn't run it in 4 minutes. If the record was 5 minutes, nobody would do it in 3 minutes. Nobody would do it in 4 minutes either. It's only when the record is 4 minutes and 5 seconds that somebody will do it in 4 minutes. And after years and years of pushing and pushing and pushing, and somebody breaks the 4 minute record, somebody is going to break that still further. Our drive to excellence is not only stimulated, but is in fact caused by competition. It's just how it is. We tend, our measure of excellence, we don't know what excellence is except by comparison with others. How do we know what the human being is capable of? Whatever you think the human being is capable of, let me assure you, is capable of a million times more. The human being's capabilities are almost infinite. When you think that they tell us that a genius uses about 6% of his concentration, an average person uses 2 or 3%, just imagine what would happen if we used 10%, 15%, 20% of our concentration, what we could achieve. Just imagine if our time was utilized a little bit better. Just imagine if we were more fit. Just imagine if our minds were better trained and a little bit sharper, what could be achieved. We tend to sink down into our average sort of lives, and then we think of excellence as doing a bit better than average. Doing a bit better than average is not excellent, that's still average. Excellence means doing the best possible. And you can't know what's possible until somebody else has done it and you've got to beat that. Then you can know it's possible. When somebody's reached a height which you thought was impossible, now you have a definition of excellence. What I thought was impossible is not, and I've got to go still further than that. And then it becomes meaningful. One's pursuit of excellence now has some kind of measure. One isn't groping in the dark just to do well. One's groping for a specific aim, to beat him. And that really is the basis of ambition, and it's the basis of competition, and it's the correct use of kina. That's what kina is. And that's why the Medrash says, Ilmale kina, if it weren't for kina, Ein ha'olam oimed, the world couldn't exist. People would just not excel at anything. They wouldn't do anything. We're prompted to stress ourselves and to stretch ourselves and to push ourselves by the achievement of others. However, what's important is when you've broken the record, your sense of thrill, and here you have the real professional, a professional runner, for example. So he's now done the mile in less than 4 minutes. What's his thrill? I beat him. No, I broke the record. It's got nothing to do with him. It's not a personal thing. While he was busy running, all he was thinking of was beating him. The moment the race is over, he's forgotten about him already. Now, it's the achievement, it's the essential achievement of that excellence. I've broken the record, that's all that's important. If one's trying to, whatever it is, in any field, to excel in the sense of doing better than the best specialist, and one manages, it's not that you're playing Spassky, or whoever it is that's the chess champion nowadays. While you're busy playing with him, there's only one thing, and that's to beat Spassky. Once you've beaten Spassky, that's already out of your mind. Now you're the chess champion. Spassky's finished. You don't sit and take pleasure, I beat Spassky. Your pleasure is, I am the chess champion. When that's not the case, when your pleasure after the achievement is also, I beat so-and-so, that's when it's kina. That's when it's jealousy, and that's not good. It's all very well to use jealousy as the spur, to use jealousy as the measure of excellence, as the definition of excellence. But that your fulfillment is derived from having beaten the other guy, that's no good, that's negative jealousy. Leo has already beaten Rachel. But they're both striving to play a more important part in the building up of Klal Yisrael. That's what they're both busy doing. And Leah's one up on Rachel. As far as tonight is concerned, Leah's already one up on Rachel. She made a deal with her. And Yaakov is going to be spending the evening with her, with Leah. So that's all over. What does she have to stress? A lie. To me, not to her. It's not said, but it's implied. That's what's not good. But Tate says she went out to Yaakov with a sense of conquest. She has been victorious over Rachel. And that's out of place. That's using kino negatively, not positively, on her great level, on Leah's level. We're using simple words, but it's not so simple how this applied to a woman such as Leah. What happened with Yaakov? Yaakov put dinner into a box, as any of us would have done. Who would have wanted dinner to land up the husband like Esau? But the Torah tells us, and Chazal tell us, that wasn't all there was to it. There was a touch of something else there too. If that was his only motive, would the Torah have punished him? Is that such a terrible thing? He wanted to save dinner from Esau. Would that have been such a terrible thing? If that was all he did, it wouldn't have been so bad. But there was a touch of something else. There was a touch of Esau, you not getting my daughter. Not my daughter is not going to land up with you for a husband, but you're not going to get my daughter. And that's kina. That's a touch of jealousy. You've made it, you've excelled, you're far ahead of Esau. Esau now possibly wants to come back into the fold. If all you're interested in is to save your daughter from Esau, that's one thing. But Chazal seemed to imply that there was the tiniest touch in Yaakov of pleasure in being able to deny Dina to Esau. It's another victory. He's making it over Esau again. And that little bit is no good. So the two contributing factors to Dina's rape, both in the case of Yaakov and of Leah, of Dina's two parents, both have the same origin. A slight touch of lording it over somebody who's already been beaten. A little bit of kin. And the punishment for that is that Dina is taken, not seductively, but by force, by somebody who wants something that isn't his. Kina. Shem is jealous, he wants Dina. And there we have the result of that little tiny touch of kina, that little tiny touch of jealousy. We have the same concept, not negatively, but just in existence, a little bit earlier in the Sedra, where Yaakov is traipsing along to try and find the place where he's going to spend the time. And he comes to this well, and he asks them if they know the family and so on. At that time, Rachel comes down to the well. Vayishak Yaakov leRachel, and Yaakov kissed Rachel. Vayisa eskolu vayevkin, and lifted up his voice and he wailed. What's he wailing about? He's finally got home. What's there to cry about? Says Rashi, Vayevki was crying lefisha bo b'yodayim reikaniyos. He came with empty hands. Omar, he said, Eliezer Eved Ovi, this was the exact spot where Eliezer, my grandfather's slave, came. Avi Eved Ovi Abba, the slave of my father's father. Hoyu b'yodov nezomim utzmidim umigdonos. He had nose rings and bracelets and bangles and necklaces and all beautiful things. Vani en biyodi kruman. I come here and I'm also looking for a shidduch. And I've got nothing to give. I'm empty handed. The reason was because Esav sent his son Eliphaz to try and kill Yaakov. Eliphaz went chasing after Yaakov. He eventually caught up with Yaakov, and Yaakov, when he came into confrontation with Eliphaz, Eliphaz couldn't kill him because Yaakov was Eliphaz's Rebbe. Yaakov brought his nephew up, taught Eliphaz. Eliphaz came out to kill him. When he met Yaakov, he couldn't put the knife into him. I said to Eliphaz, but what am I going to do? I've got to respect my father's wishes too. He said, I must kill you. I said, Yaakov, so take everything I've got, take all my money and take all my gold and everything I've got, take the lot. And an Oni is Choshev Kemeres. As I'll say, if a person is poor, he's considered as impotent as a dead person. It's an interesting chazal altogether, which we'll talk about sometimes again. Tell your father, I'm dead. To all intents and purposes, I'm dead. So I'm still physically alive. That's none of his business. I can't do anything. I'm useless. I'm finished. Yeah, and tell him that. Which is what happened, and Eliphaz took everything that Yaakov had. Yaakov comes to the well. There's Rachel, who he realizes immediately is his wife to be. The very same place where Eliezer stood some decades before, looking for a wife for his father Yitzchak. And Eliezer had all the riches in the world to offer, and Yaakov has nothing, so he cries. What's he crying about? Money. Eliezer had money and he didn't. And when Eliezer looked for a wife, he had something to pay and he's got nothing to pay. Is that what he's getting excited about? Is that a touch of jealousy? A tiny little touch. Not a negative one, but we have it. It's there. There is such a thing. How do we use this jealousy positively? Firstly, the Medrash tells us, this Medrash which I quoted to you earlier, Malay Kino, if it weren't for jealousy, Ein Ha'ilam Omeid, the world would not stand. People wouldn't be going to business, they wouldn't get married, they wouldn't build homes. It's an interesting thing, by the way. Ask yourself sometime, if you were stuck on a desert island and you could take anything you wanted, but only one thing, as much as you wanted of one thing, what would you take? Or five things? You'd rather take five things. Just list them. Sit down with a pencil and paper when you get home tonight. A desert island where there's going to be nothing else. And list five things that you would take. What you'll find interesting is that you probably won't find five. You know, if you're alone on a desert island, you don't need much. Everything that you need is really because of social pressures. So just think, what are you going to take? You want a companion. So you'll take a companion. That's one. So you want books. So you'll take books. That's one item. You want music. So you'll take music. Now what else? What are you going to do on a desert island? You don't need a motor car, and you don't need money, and you don't need nothing. Whatever you'll need, you'll find there. All the other needs of human beings for which they strive and strive and strive would be useless to them on a desert island where there aren't other people. It's all social needs. We need it because of society. It's kino. It's keeping up with the Joneses. Pasnit, where everybody's living in a house, it pasnit to live in a mud hut. So you could have a house too. And if everybody's living in a 10-roomed house, it doesn't pass to live in a 1-roomed house. You could live at least in a 5-roomed house. And if everybody's got 6 motor cars, it pass me to have only 2, you would have at least 4. And if everybody's got a tennis court and a swimming pool, you would have at least a tennis court or a swimming pool. But if nobody had any of these things, you wouldn't have them either. It just wouldn't be terribly important. These things acquire importance and urgency because they become a measure of one's success in society. And nobody wants to feel a failure. And we all want to feel like we're excelling at what we're doing. And if this is how we measure excellence, then people go after it. That's all there is to it. And it's not like that. Yet the Medrash tells us that that's the praise for jealousy, because if it weren't for jealousy, nothing would be done in the material world. Does that mean that we're meant to use it? Says the Medrash that if it weren't for jealousy, these things would never occur. In using, in the correct utilization of kino, what one has to do is decide in what one wants to excel. That's all. If you want to excel in chess, then you've got to make sure that there isn't a chess player in the world who you can't beat. And you've got to be jealous of any person who plays chess better than you. Because if you're not jealous of anybody who plays chess better than you, you will never be the chess champion. It is a requirement to excel in chess playing. You need to be jealous of every good chess player. And if you want to be excellent in business, you've got to be jealous of anybody who's more successful in business than you. And if you want to be not successful, if you want to excel in any profession or in anything that you do, you've got to be jealous of anybody who's doing better than you in that particular area. But you've got to decide in what you want to excel, because it's not easy to excel in everything and be jealous of everybody. That's when it's Moisiyas Ha'odom in Ha'ilam. When you're just basically jealous of everybody, that's when it's going to destroy you. But to use it correctly, you've got to use it in the field which you've chosen to excel. Now the Midrash tells us that if it weren't for jealousy, people wouldn't build houses and things like that. Nothing would get done in the world. So what does that mean? That we must now choose the material activity of life for our next field of excellence, because that's where jealousy is correctly used. If you look at the continuation of the Midrash, again, this is a Midrash which we used only a few weeks ago, it fits in very beautifully now. Midrash goes on, Ilmale shikono kino Avrom lo ayak fene shemayim v'oretz. If Avrom didn't have jealousy, he wouldn't have achieved the heights that he did. When did he become jealous? When he said to Malki Tzedek, how did you come out of the ark? Malki Tzedek said, the reason we were saved was because of the tzedakah, the chesed that we did in the ark. That's what saved us. Now, what is Avram's area of excellence? Chesed. That's his profession. He is out to make sure that there is nobody in the world that is better at chesed than he is. What tzedakah did you do in the ark? Were there any poor people, etc., etc.? He said, no, we did it to the animals. These people in the ark, Noach and his family, if they didn't do chesed with the animals, would never have got out. Because they did tzedakah, they got out. If God was prepared to react miraculously against nature to people who did chesed with animals, can you imagine how you'll react to somebody who does chesed with people? At that point he planted himself, he established himself in Be'er Sheva. Eishel stands for Achilo Shtiyo Levir. He opened his house to everybody and provided food and drink and lodging in his home. And here we really have a beautiful understanding of the pursuit of excellence. The pursuit of excellence has to be in a field A where you can achieve it. It's no good pursuing it in an area where you're not talented. For a Jew to pursue excellence in business, let's say, it's suicide. That's the end of his spiritual progress. It's the end of his learning. It's the end of his Shmiras Mitzvahs. It's the end of his Menschlichkeit. Because he's got to kill anybody who's doing better than him. For a Jew to strive for excellence in chess playing, virtually the same. He has to sit and spend more time on chess than everybody else spends. And if he wants to become excellent in any field, he has the same problems. So he can either choose to become excellent in Torah, in learning, if he has the ability in the background, or there's another possibility. He can choose to excel like Avraham, like the first Jew, in Chesed. And now it becomes very interesting, because now you need to be good at everything. If you want to excel in chesed, you've got to have the means to do chesed. So now he can dedicate himself to business, let's say, not to the extent as if business was what he was going to become excellent in, but certainly he needs to be successful because he wants to do chesed. He needs a decent income to give lots of tzedakah. And now he's going to build a house. He wants to build a really nice house. Is that considered materialistic? It depends. He wants to excellence. If he's going to build a house, it's got to be the best house. That's materialism, and that's dangerous quest for excellence, unless he says, but why do I want a house? Because of Eshel. Achilo Shtiyo Lino, I want chesed in my home. That's why I want it. And I want a big home so that lots of people can come into it. That's why I want it. So all of a sudden, his material quests become spiritually significant, and the excellence he's striving for is Jewish excellence. It's excellence in chesed. And when we talked last week about being Osek B'Toyro U'B'Chesed, about dealing in Torah and Chesed, that's what we're talking about. When a man is Osek, when a man is in business, that's his profession, he's involved in the pursuit of excellence at the cost of everything. Makes no difference, he's going to get there. And the same way as one can be Osek but Torah, one can dedicate oneself to the pursuit of excellence in learning, so one can and should, either in addition or alternatively, pursue excellence in Chesed. Be Osek b'Chesed, don't just do Chesed. be oisek b'chesed, chesed becomes your profession, and your pursuit of excellence is in the area of chesed, and everything you do now revolves around that. Whatever you're doing in order to make yourself more potent in the area of chesed, in the area of doing for others, in whatever form it's going to be. And the whole thing starts making sense all of a sudden. And so yes, there is such a thing as kino, there is such a thing as jealousy, and like most midas, it can be used positively and it can be used negatively. If one uses kino, if one uses jealousy as one's means of fulfillment, one gets a kick out of beating the other guy. That's negative jealousy, which is going to get you nowhere. But if one simply decides that kino is going to prod you onto excellence, because excellence is defined that in the area of my expertise, there's nobody better than me. That's what excellence means. And when you find somebody better than you, you're jealous of them, because that means you're not excelling. That's what it means. And you use that jealousy to spur you on to excellence. That's in order. But you have to choose your area of pursuit of excellence carefully. And the areas that a Jew chooses for pursuit of excellence is... Lastly, I think it's important to appreciate, in the light of this, the pathetic importance of society. Because once we accept that your pursuit of excellence is going to be defined, or rather your level of excellence is going to be defined by others, it depends now. So if you want to be a doctor, you've got to find the place where the best, and you want to be an excellent doctor, no good hanging around at the University of Pondokisfontein. You've got to find the university that is best worldwide for the particular branch of medicine that you're studying, and there you've got to be the best. It doesn't help being the best in Pondokisfontein. It doesn't mean you're excelling. One's standards become adjusted to the people around and about one. If one wants to excel in Torah, you can't sit around in some little place, in some little yeshiva, whatever it is. You've got to get to the best, and the biggest, the greatest. And there you've got to be the best. Otherwise, you're not excelling. And if you want to excel in Gemilus Chasodin, you've got to live with people who excel in Gemilus Chasodin. Because if you're going to take your norm from the people around you, and they're so-so when it comes to Chesed, what kind of excellence is there going to be? And one starts to fool oneself, one thinks one is excelling because one's better than all the people one knows, not realizing that all the people you know are, as it is, mediocre or at best average in the particular thing in which you're trying to excel. So being a little bit better than the people you know means that you're a little bit better than average, that's all. And one's whole set of standards of what constitutes excellence is set by the society in which one lives. And that's again back to Oisek Batoiro Yimilus Chasodim. That's the meaning of dealing in Torah and Midas Chasodim. When a man is dealing in something, he goes to the best, and he doesn't compromise, and he makes sure that he's got the best, and that he's at the best, and that he's holding and pursuing by the best. When it comes to Torah and Midas Chasodim, which are the professions of the Jew, a Jew has to ensure that where he is the best for that, and that one involves oneself in a society and in a community that is excelling towards that. What does that all got to do with our original question of the conflict between the aims of the individual in his pursuit for excellence and chesed? Even in one's pursuit of excellence, there is an area of chesed in that you're setting new standards for somebody else to break. One has to appreciate that too. That when you're busy breaking a record of achievement, it's not just your achievement. You've now set a whole new ball game for your colleagues and your friends. If one's operating in that kind of society, which is a society of Oisek B'Torah Gemilus Chasodim, where Torah and Gemilus Chasodim is the job, or Gemilus Chasodim only, whatever it is, where that's the profession, then every time you break a record, it's not just something you're doing for yourself. It's a new standard that you're setting. When a person breaks the 4-minute record, and he's now done it in 3 minutes and 3 3/4 minutes, it's not just his own achievement, it's an achievement for the whole profession. And he's now set new standards for everybody else, and everybody has to be very grateful for that. He has shown that it is feasible to do it in that time, and now excellence takes on a new meaning. So the man who excels in whatever he does, apart from the fact that he himself is excelling, in addition to that, is also laying open new standards and new definitions of what constitutes excellence. And there he finds that in his own, so to say, selfish pursuits, he is simultaneously satisfying the needs of the community in which he operates. And so kin or jealousy, which starts off as being something terribly negative and something terribly destructive, can be used to achieve the greatest of heights if it's used correctly. If the area of excellence is chosen carefully and kin is used only as a spur. And in fact, by using kin in reverse, one can land up in one's own pursuit of excellence, achieving a great deal of satisfaction chesed-wise in establishing new standards for one's community.